The Tudor History and Travel Show is a podcast that brings Tudor history to life by exploring Tudor places and artifacts in the flesh. You will be travelling through time with Sarah Morris, the Tudor Travel Guide, uncovering the stories behind some of the most amazing Tudor locations and objects in the UK. Because when you visit a Tudor building, it is only time and not space which separates you from the past. And now over to your host, Sarah Morris.
Hello, it's Sarah here, the Tudor Travel Guide, and welcome to this month's episode. We are in the height of summer, although you wouldn't know it here. It's extremely cold and grey outside my window as I record this. But nevertheless, undaunted, today we are travelling to the north of England to visit Temple Newsome in Yorkshire. Now, Temple Newsome was the one-time home of Margaret Douglas, Countess of Lennox, and of course the birthplace of Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley. And we will be hearing from our two guides today in a moment, who will be telling us about the history of the house and the people who lived there, and will be taking us on a little guided tour of the property. So, stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, I wanted to say, of course, it is summertime. And this time of year was when the Tudors headed off on progress. And indeed, I'm going to be doing the same thing later on this month. At the Tudor Travel Guide, we try to block some time over the end of July and August to allow us to get out on the road and to grab as much content as possible that we can bring to you through the autumn and the winter months. And also, I'm going to be gathering a little bit of extra content for a project that I have planned. Now, if you want to follow me on my progress and the various places I'm visiting through the summer, the best place to do that is to find me on Instagram. Instagram's a place that I post all my on-location pictures and stories and reels. So yeah, if you want to travel vicariously and see what might be coming your way later on this year, then please do find me on Instagram. Just search The Tudor Travel Guide. Okay, with that, let's just get straight on with our episode today. Because it's quite a long episode, there is a lot to find out about Temple Newsome. And I'm going to go over right now. It was a beautiful sunny day when I met up with our two guides, Rob Lee and Rebecca Allott, who will go on and introduce themselves both in the moment. So join us in conversation in the gardens as we surveyed the beautiful Temple Newsome. Well, hello, Rob. Welcome to the Tudor History and Travel Show.
Well, it's lovely to have you here. Welcome to Temple Newsome. It's a lovely day. Shall we have a look around the house?
Well, we're going to do that in a minute, and I'm very excited, and I'll explain why in a second. But before we go into that, maybe for those people tuning in and listening, it'd be great if you could introduce yourself and just let folk know what you do here at Temple Newsome.
Well, I'm Robert Lee. Everybody calls me Rob. I've worked at Temple Newsome for 15 years now. I'm a visitor assistant. We've got various duties. My favourite duty is showing people around the house.
Oh, well, there you go. And, of course, after such a long time of lockdown and COVID,
oh, yes,
feeling a bit out of practice, this would be a great time, won't it, to get things moving again?
Looking forward to it, absolutely, yes. Really looking forward to it.
And also joining us today is Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, it's lovely to be with you today.
And what do you do here at Temple Newsome?
I'm also a visitor assistant, and I work mostly with the community team, welcoming our very varied community into the house and organising events for them.
That's fabulous. So together, you and Rob are going to be the team, the dream team showing us around today.
Yeah, we can't wait to show you around. It's going to be great to be able to talk to people about the house again.
Well, I want to start off by saying I'm delighted to be here because I'm a Yorkshire girl and I'm from North Yorkshire. But, I mean, we're not too far away from my hometown of Harrogate, maybe 45 minutes or so in West Yorkshire. But I'm rather ashamed to say I've never been here. And I say that because we've arrived on this amazing day and you've got this fabulous house and the parks surrounding it are truly spectacular. It's springtime, it looks amazing, and I'm, as I say, I'm feeling, why haven't I been here earlier? It's like a real hidden gem.
It is indeed, and it's got a fantastic history. The park does get very busy. People from Leeds do visit the park quite regularly. But the house itself, it is a hidden gem. It's got a fantastic history, and it doesn't get the profile it deserves in most of our opinion in the house.
Well, here we go today. We're going to spread the news about Temple Newsome far and wide. But you make a good point. Today it's near Leeds, which of course is a major northern city. But you certainly don't get the feel from that.
You don't at all. When visitors come from places outside Yorkshire, from various different cities, often when they're in the house and they look out over the green grass and everything, they think they're in the middle of the Dales, but they're not. They're actually in the middle of a big city.
Yeah, that is incredible. Can I just start by, before we start concentrating on the house and the history of the house, because as you pointed out, it's got some amazing Tudor history. Can I just ask you about this mass of parkland? I'm assuming this was originally part of the park associated with the Great House, is that right?
Oh, yes, yes. It's all grounds that belong to the proprietors of Temple Newsome. The people who owned Temple Newsome had a vast amount of lands, really. In Tudor times, they probably had even more than they have now, you know.
Yeah, and a huge hunting park.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's de rigueur, really, if you're a well-to-do
yes.
Tudor.
Definitely. Yeah. He has massive, massive lands, particularly when the house was first built by Thomas Lord Darcy. The land was given to him by Henry VII, and they owned most of the towns around here as well. Well, not towns, there'll have been villages then, of course, you know, very different.
Now, I've heard Temple Newsome referred to as the Hampton Court of the North. So who said that, and why did that label get attached to Temple Newsome?
I think the Hampton Court of the North, unless I'm mistaken, is a relatively recent thing. I think it's to do with the royal connections, particularly in Tudor times. Henry Lord Darnley, of course, was born here, and he married Mary Queen of Scots, as your listeners will well know, and they'll know the history of Darnley and Mary Queen of Scots. And later on, Margaret Douglas and the Earl of Lennox lived here. Margaret Douglas, of course, was the niece of Henry VIII. So they had, back in Tudor times, in particular, had royal connections.
Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley, was the second husband of Mary, Queen of Scots. Following his marriage to Mary in 1565, he became King Consort of Scotland. He had both Scottish and English royal blood running through his veins, being the great-grandson of the founder of the Tudor dynasty, King Henry VII, on his mother's side. But Henry Stuart was born at Temple Newsome in around 1545 or 1546. Growing up, the young lad became well versed in Latin and familiar with Gaelic, English and French. He also excelled in singing, lute playing and dancing. He was said to be strong, athletic, skilled in horsemanship and weaponry, and passionate about hunting and hawking. Lord Darnley's mother, Margaret Douglas, was ambitious for her son and did much to propagate a union between the Catholic Lennoxes and Mary, Queen of Scots. Although Darnley met Mary when she was Queen of France, he first seriously came to the attention of the newly returned Scottish Queen in the spring of 1565. Mary was quickly smitten, and it is recorded that she felt he was the, quote, lustiest and best proportioned long man that she had seen, unquote. From that point forward, through the spring and summer of 1565, they were rarely apart. However, Darnley was deeply unpopular with the Scottish nobility, and Mary was warned against him. But by this time she was completely besotted, and the Scots queen pressed ahead with the marriage. Thus, on the 29th of July 1565, the two were married in Mary's private chapel at Holyrood. But despite Mary's insistence that the marriage go ahead, even by this time, ominous cracks were already beginning to show in their relationship. For Darnley had quickly begun to show his true colours as arrogant, vain and quick to temper, fuelled far too often by his excessive consumption of alcohol. The two quickly became estranged, with Mary refusing to give Darnley what he craved most, the crown matrimonial. This would have made him the successor to the Scottish throne if Mary had died childless. In the meantime, Mary and Darnley's son James, the future King James VI of Scotland and I of England, was born on the 19th of June 1566 at Edinburgh Castle. However, just 8 months later, Darnley was murdered. On the night of the 9th or 10th of February 1567, his body and that of his valet were discovered in the orchard of Kirkafield in Edinburgh. It was Mary's refusal to implicate or hold to account the prime suspect, who was the hated Earl of Bothwell, that ignited the series of events that would later see Mary forced to abdicate her throne in favour of her infant son around 5 months later. Following his death, Darnley was buried in the royal vaults of Holyrood Abbey.
So here we are on one of the lawns.
Well, we do call it the bowling green, but it's basically the lawn which is at the west of the house.
Okay, so I'm looking at a huge west range of the house. Can you just describe for us the kind of, broadly speaking, the layout of the house today, as in how many wings and how is it oriented, and how did that differ from the house that was built at the beginning of the Tudor period?
Well, the reason we've actually come onto this lawn is because you can, if anybody visits, if you go onto the lawn, find the lawn, you can actually look. And if you look at the middle section of the house, you can actually see in there the crisscross diaper pattern, which is actually peculiar to Tudor buildings. And what's really interesting, at each side of the diaper pattern, you can actually see where it's actually just plain brickwork, which was actually the Jacobean add-ons.
Right.
At either side. If you can imagine that where you can see the diaper pattern, that would have been a building on its own. And if you can imagine missing out each corner,
yep.
The three-storey bit in the middle there would have been, on either side, would have two-storied wings going out.
Yes.
And there would be a wing connecting them across the east.
Was it a single courtyard house, the original Tudor house?
Yes, you just had one courtyard in the middle.
So four ranges, single courtyard.
It wasn't an open courtyard like it is now. It would have been an enclosed courtyard.
Right, OK, because it's almost like a U-shape now,
yes,
the house,
right, yeah,
isn't it? So it's lost one of its wings over
It lost its other wing in 1622 when the house was rebuilt by a businessman called Sir Arthur Ingram. There is stories of a fire, but the fire that happened at the time is highly unlikely to be the reason that that was demolished. It's more probable that the U-shape was fashionable in them days, more fashionable.
Yes.
There was a fire, but it was a localised fire, which was more in the south wing.
I see.
That is very unlikely to have been the cause of the demolishment of the east wing.
So the house you see today, although it has been remodelled over the centuries, you do get that Tudor and certainly Jacobean feel from some of the features that you've described, the red brick, the diapering pattern, and the shape of some of the windows is certainly Tudor, if not Jacobean, is that right?
Tudor Jacobean.
Yeah.
It was built originally in Tudor times and then remodelled extensively in Jacobean times. The south wing was remodelled once again in the 18th century, but it kept its Jacobean feel. Most of the people who owned the house I've always been quite proud of the heritage of the house, so they've tried to preserve as much as they can the heritage of the house.
So it hasn't been completely ripped apart and destroyed.
Unfortunately not. There's still some bits remain.
That's wonderful.
But it was a house that was lived in. It was a family home right up until the 19th century. So people did chop and change, and it depended how wealthy they were and, you know, what they wanted to do and the taste at the time, you know.
Yes, of course. OK, so that's what we can see today, but I'd love to know more about how the Tudor house came into being. What were the sequence of events that led to the manor house being built here?
Well, basically, Thomas Lord Darcy was a courtier of Henry VII. He was he was a Knight of the Garter, and he fought battles against the Scottish. He went on a famous campaign to Spain, to Cadiz, which failed abysmally, and they had to come back with his tail between his legs. But nevertheless, he still remained a favourite of Henry VII. When Henry VIII came to the throne, things changed, of course, and when Henry VIII began the dissolution of the monasteries, and he was quite a Catholic man, quite a religious man, and he took part, whether willingly or whether he was induced, into the Pilgrimage of Grace. He took part in the Pilgrimage of Grace, and ultimately that led to his downfall. He was beheaded in London by...
convicted of treason leading nobleman, I guess, part of the Pilgrimage.
In fact, in some records, he's recorded as being one of the leaders of the Pilgrimage of Grace, although he always said that he was coerced into it rather than taking part willingly. You see, he also owned Pontefract Castle, and what he was actually convicted of, one of the things he was convicted of, was surrendering Pontefract Castle to the rebels.
Ah, I see. So he didn't fight hard enough for the cause, and maybe that was his Achilles heel.
Well, I mean, as you know, the Pilgrimage of Grace was never really a fight. It was more of a crusade sort of thing, and it never actually came to any violence until it was all over, till Henry VIII had said that everybody would get free pardons and they could all go home and everything would be forgotten. And of course, as your listeners will know, it was very different. It didn't end like that.
So we got Thomas Lord Darcy being given this land, and he builds this gorgeous Tudor manor house here. So he owns it for how many years?
Well, off the top of the head, I can't really remember, but when he was executed, the house was confiscated by Henry VIII, who then gave it to his favourite niece, Margaret Douglas, who was, as we were saying earlier, was a very fascinating woman. She was married to the Earl of Lennox, well, as I said earlier, some people say that he was given as a wedding present, but I think it's more likely that he wanted Margaret Douglas out of the way because she was quite a mischievous woman.
Well, she's got an amazing life story. That was a woman I'm determined to find out a little bit more about, because when you read just the sort of thumbnail, top-line story, she ended up in the tower three times and managed to survive. So her life was full of intrigue and, as you say, misadventure, maybe.
Yes. I mean, a couple of times when she was put in the tower, it wasn't really her fault. I mean, she was put in the tower when Darnley married Mary Queen of Scots, and she was put in the tower when Charles Darnley's brother married as well, because he married somebody who Elizabeth disapproved of
Yes.
Margaret Douglas, Countess of Lennox, was the daughter of the Scottish Queen Dowager, Margaret Tudor, sister of King Henry VIII of England, and Margaret Tudor's second husband, Archibald Douglas, the 6th Earl of Angus. She was born at Harbottle Castle in Northumberland on the 7th of October 1515. Due to unrest in Scotland and threats made by the then King of Scotland, James V, towards Margaret's father, the latter sent the 15-year-old Margaret back across the border into England. By 1530, she was invited to live in the household of Cardinal Wolsey. Then after his death, she moved to the Royal Palace of Bewley in Essex, where she resided in the household of Princess Mary. And Mary subsequently became her lifelong friend. In her youth, Margaret Douglas was high in favour with her uncle, Henry VIII of England, but twice she incurred the king's wrath. First, for her unauthorised engagement to Lord Thomas Howard, who died in the Tower of London in 1537 because of his misalliance with her. And then again in 1540, as a result of an affair with Thomas Howard's nephew, Sir Charles Howard, the brother of Henry VIII's wife, Catherine Howard. Margaret served as a lady in the households of Anne Boleyn, Anne of Cleves, and was one of the few witnesses to Catherine Parr's marriage to Henry VIII in the Queen's closet at Hampton Court Palace, subsequently becoming one of Queen Catherine's chief ladies-in-waiting. On July the 6th, 1544, she herself married at the age of 29 to Matthew Stuart, 4th Earl of Lennox, one of Scotland's leading noblemen. On the death of Mary I, Margaret acted as principal mourner. And then, after Mary's death, and on the accession of her Protestant half-sister, Elizabeth, Margaret Douglas moved to the more Catholic north, to her new home of Temple Newsome, where she gave birth to her son, Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley, who, of course, later married Mary, Queen of Scots, becoming the father of James VI of Scotland and first of England. Margaret Douglas eventually died on the 7th of March, 1578, and was given a grand burial in Westminster Abbey. So, Margaret Douglas moves here with her husband. She gives birth to Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley here,
who, of course,
as you pointed out, goes on to marry Mary, Queen of Scots. So, I mean, from that alone, this is such a significant site. It's incredible to think that the future king, and I use that word loosely, but King of Scotland, Mary never gave him the crown matrimonial of Scotland, but certainly as his consort was born here.
Well, Henry Lord Darnley was an absolutely fascinating... I mean, Margaret Douglas was fascinating. As you say, she was absolutely... people who have not read about her and are fans who enjoy reading about Tudor times must read about Margaret Douglas. She's a fascinating woman. But also they must read about Henry Lord Darnley because he is one of the... If it was fiction, you wouldn't believe it.
It was
just so...
He was quite a character
and got
Mary in all sorts of trouble.
Well, he was not a very pleasant man at all.
No, he wasn't. But as you say, that probably the life story of Margaret Douglas and Lord Darnley are podcasts in and of their own right.
Oh, massive, yeah, easy.
Now, we're going to be exploring bits of the house today, but one of the things I'm interested to know is what do we know of the layout of the privy apartments where, for example, the likes of Lord Darnley would have been born. Do we know where those events happened within the house?
We do have plans of the house from Tudor times, but a lot of them are based on speculation, it has to be said. We do know that the Great Hall was in the south. That's always been in the south. We do know that the entrance to the house was in the north wing. There would have been an archway where you went into the courtyard and then you would go up into the house the same way as you do now. We believe Lord Darcy's rooms would have been, like any Tudor house, you'd have the Great Hall where they use it for dining and everything. And then at one side, you'd have the domestic, the kitchens and everything. And then at the other side, you'd have, above the Great Hall, you would have the bedrooms of the Lord and Lady. Of course, things have changed massively since then, so all them bits don't exist. We do have a room called the Darnley Room, which some people say Darnley was born in, but unfortunately that's physically impossible because it wasn't built until 40 years after he died.
It's one of those wonderful myths that
it's one of them, yeah. So we've got that up there. But most of the rooms that Darnley and his contemporaries would have used have been changed and beyond the belief.
So the bottom line is we don't really know. We know what the shape of the house was. We know where some of the key chambers, like the Great Hall, was, but we don't really know what the layout of those rooms would have been or where significant events happened.
We have some plans that show where certain things were. We know where the kitchens were. We know where the Great Hall was. We know certain rooms in the, what we call the West Wing. Well, it's the West Wing here, which is Tudor. We do know what some of them rooms were used for. But the rooms that have been changed in Jacobean times, it's educated speculation. It's not pure speculation. So, you know, we do have some idea, but it's wrong to say for certain. Like a lot of history, we do have a good idea, but we don't know for certain.
So, on that educated guess, what wing were the privy apartments in?
Most probably, I would have said on the West Wing.
So the West Wing we're looking at now. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening into this, as ever, there will be a show notes page associated with this podcast. And I'll be posting some photographs and it sounds like some plans that we have associated with the house. So if you are listening to this, do make sure that you click on the link, which will be in the description so that you can have a look at those images. Okay, so maybe we should go and explore inside or look at some parts of the house that you think might be interesting and relating to the Tudor history of Temple Newsom.
You're more than welcome. We're looking forward to showing
you
around.
Let's go.
Outside wall of the Tudor house. And if you come this way, you can actually see the Tudor lock there.
Yes.
And behind you, you've got what they would have hung the doors on there.
Oh, yeah.
This is the outside wall that you would have been looking at when you came down from the car park.
Yeah. So this was originally, this whole part of this wing was the servants, the domestic kitchen end, was
it? The kitchen was built down where we're going now in the end of the 18th century, around 1790s, wasn't it? We've just been looking. And it took the place of where the Jacobean chapel was. The Tudor chapel would have been just about where we are now.
Oh, really? Right, okay.
The Tudor chapel would have been in this area. So now we're actually, this was all done in the 1980s, all this was all added. In the 1980s, the kitchen went to Fairfax House in York, unfortunately. So the kitchen's gone. But before this was the kitchen, it was originally the Jacobean chapel. I mean, the evidence for that, if you look at the windows, they're actually curved at the top. And that would have accommodated, these windows would have all been beautiful stained glass windows. This was the site of the chapel. The chapel itself would have been an absolutely fantastic site.
I was just wondering, actually, one of the things that was questions that were occurring to me is, if the Tudor chapel was at the far end of the wing to where we're standing now, and this is the Jacobean chapel, that's a lot of work to undertake to move a chapel. I'm wondering why they didn't just renovate the Tudor chapel in the site that it was.
So the reason that I've been told that the chapel was moved to this end is the light. If you can imagine where we were standing before at the other end of this wing, the sunshine just does not blaze in on a morning like it does here.
Well, that would make a lot. They're going to go really down-to-earth, practical reason.
Very Yorkshire reason.
I like that.
So now we're going to head up to the picture gallery, which is one of the Tudor... Well, it was a Tudor room, but it looks very, very different now.
Okay, well, lead the way and let's go and explore.
Bye.
So we've come into this huge room, quite a contrast from downstairs where we were below stairs in sort of the, what felt like the servants' corridors, and indeed was. We've come into this massive room, so where are we now?
Well, this is a picture gallery, and it has to be said, this is one of the most authentic rooms in the house. If you look around, you see all the furniture. All the furniture in this room was actually custom-made for this room in the 18th century. Most of the portraits you see around the wall were actually painted to be put in this room.
Aha, right.
So, you know, you're supposed to be... we've got a lovely day today, but if the weather was bad, this would be used almost like a gymnasium. People would come and do circuits of it just to...
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because it's a bit of a combo between a long gallery and almost like a ballroom.
It is indeed.
So it was used as the Tudors would have... I'm not saying this is Tudor, but as the Tudors would have used their long gallery...
The Tudor gallery would actually have been even longer than this. It is said that the Tudor gallery would have actually gone from the end there... Right to the other end there, so the whole length of the wing.
Oh, so we do think this is on the footprint of the original Tudor Gallery.
We believe it is. Although it was changed really extensively in Georgian times. But, it, you know, Tudor things aside, this is one of the finest examples of a Georgian room that you will see anywhere in the country.
I see a couple of monarchs hanging on the walls.
Yes, up there, that's William and Mary.
William and Mary, of course, were responsible for half-demolishing Tudor Hampton Court. Yes. She died of smallpox, didn't she, I think? And that's why Hampton Court never got completely demolished. We were talking before about Lord Darnley being born here. He was raised here. Would we call Temple Newsome his childhood home?
That would be difficult to say because he was also brought up a lot in court. He was down in London a lot, and he was known in the courts of Elizabeth and everything down there. You know, he was a courtier, I suppose.
So he maybe...
He was relatively young. And he's, of course, with his parents being so prominent, he would travel a lot to London. I don't think he went to Scotland a lot. I think he only went to Scotland when he actually met Mary Queen of Scots. Yeah, I know he went to France because he met Mary Queen of Scots France. So he did a lot of travelling. To say it was his childhood home, I think I'm not 100% sure, but I would think he did a lot more travelling than that.
Yeah, right. Okay.
We've just got a picture here of how the house... Our curators and the people who know about these things say that this is a pretty accurate description of how the house would have been when it was rebuilt in 1622, with a banqueting hall there and these bakeries and dairies and things there.
And again, we'll put a picture of this up in the show notes. That's lovely. So you've got now the U-shaped house that we were talking about before with the one of the wings.
Yeah, and that's the kitchens there, the kitchen extension on the side there. So that was a Tudor kitchen as well. And that's where the Great Hall would have been, just behind the kitchen there. That's the wing, unfortunately, that's over there that we can't actually go in. That's where we were stood before.
The west side.
That side.
Fabulous. And look at all that beautiful. Look at all that countryside around it. You don't see that now, do you?
You don't indeed. In that direction, there is a little temple folly, which was put in by Capability Brown as well. I mean, this is where we get the knights. The Templars owned the land after the Norman conquest. It belonged to various different people, and then eventually it was given to the Knights Templars. That's where we get the prefix temple from. The Newsome comes from the Domesday Book, where it won't have been up here. It'll have been down by the river. There was a little hamlet called Newsome.
I see.
Well, there is, recently, people have been talking about a house on this site predating this one. Uh-huh. But that's very recent thoughts, and there's not...
So predating the Tudor Manor house,
there was a house on top of the hill here, but There's not a lot come of that at the moment, but there is some people who talk about a house here before this house.
That wouldn't surprise me. These, you know, when there was a very historic spot, they just tended to renew and renew and renew. It wouldn't surprise me at all if that was the case.
But it must, I mean, to build on top of the hill here is quite a statement, really. You know, it chose the site so that you could see it from all around.
Yeah, because it's very raised up and you do have these sweeping views of the parkland. And so, remind me, which would have direction would the original entrance?
That is actually the original entrance.
That is the original Tudor entrance.
Coming through the trees there, that is the original drive to the house. And it's designed so that if you walk down it, you first see the house as a speck in the distance, you drop down, you come back up and it's...
That's very clever. Yes, because we're obviously looking inside, we're looking out, we're looking across the parkland, and in the distance there is a very straight drive. It's dead centre to the house, so... They were very good at creating landscapes, weren't they, that showed off the house to the best effect. And obviously that's a great description you've just given us there of the Tudor driveway. How fascinating. So, and that approach takes you to, does that take you towards Leeds or does it take you towards London?
Oh, that's taking you east, is that? You're heading due east over that way. So it's probably towards York, is it?
Maybe towards the Great North Road originally, which would have been, of course, the main.
Yeah, it would have gone, over that way and over towards Saxton and joined the road to London.
Which, of course, was the main route to London, the main connection between the north and the south. So that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
no M1 back in those days.
Well, you see, the house had very close ties when it was first built. It had very close ties with Pontefract Castle, because Thomas Lord Darcy was, of course, he was constable of Pontefract Castle as well. Mm.
Before we go any further, if you enjoy these podcasts, did you know that you can support my work by becoming a patron of the show for as little as $1 a month? A link to find out more about this programme and the different levels of sponsorship available is included in the description associated with this podcast. And while I can't thank you in person, here's a big mwah to say a massive thank you from me. So now it's back to the show.
The room where Darnley was supposed to have been born, but as we said earlier, the room just physically wasn't even there at the time that he was born, but it's very much a homage to Darnley.
Okay, well, let's go and explore inside there. And as you say, everything's wrapped up at the moment, so...
Oh, now Bella's not. Oh, Mary isn't.
Oh, wow. I thought everything was wrapped.
No, that's Mary Queen of Scots. Margaret Douglas there. That's an interesting picture because it's got the birdcage there signifying the times that she was put in the tower.
Oh, is that right? That's fascinating. There, yeah. I had no idea about that. So it's a full-size portrait of Margaret Douglas in a fashionable black gown, a little dog at her feet, and then the birdcage. How do we know that that signifies the tower? Do you know?
Well, it's just assumed, really, but I think... As you know, in these portraits, they put in lots of significant symbols, and it's more than likely, it's very likely that is actually symbolising her being put in the tower, being imprisoned.
Looks like her towards the end of her life. She looks an older lady in this portrait.
Quite possibly. This is Arbella. Arbella Stewart.
Oh, I see.
Who was
yes.
married to Charles, Lord Darnley's brother Charles.
That is a very fine gown she's wearing. It's absolutely exquisite, well, isn't it?
I mean, I'm sure that you listeners will know the story about Arbella and unfortunate life. So you see her here all dressed up as if she's going to a party, although poor old Arbella's life was anything but a party, it has to be said.
Yes, I must admit, that is a topic for yet another podcast
because it's
an incredible story, isn't it?
Yeah.
But look at her sleeves, which is it's gold lace. It's absolutely exquisite.
It's almost like she's dressed to go to a ball or to a masquerade.
Yes, it doesn't look like a typical gown of the time, so I'm glad you said she was dressed for a party because it does look a bit fanciful.
Yeah, it does. One of the reasons they know it's Arbella is it's actually, if you follow my finger going up there, you can actually see the A.
Oh, yes, you can, A-S. Almost in the gown.
Yeah, actually in there.
I would have missed that completely. So
well, I wouldn't have known until somebody pointed it out to me, you know.
And are these rooms normally open to the public?
Unfortunately, because of the lockdown and everything like that, this year it's highly unlikely that this wing will be open again. Unfortunately, I think we're going to be working under semi-lockdown restrictions all year, no matter what.
It is planned to open when we reopen. Our season starts February half term. So the plan is that this wing will be back open by then.
By February. So February 2022. Oh. Goodness me. Yeah. It sounds like our lives are racing away from us.
Right, well, this is the Gothic room. So as you can see, it's got this pillar and arch wallpaper, which is a very Marmite wallpaper. People either love it or else they hate it.
Very distinctive, isn't it?
It's very distinctive and very intricate, and it's not to everybody's taste, it has to be said. But when they actually decorated this room, they stripped it right back, and when they got back to the timber here, they actually found, scraped into the timber, a stag's head, and above it, a Tudor rose. The creators and everybody assume that this is actually a piece of Tudor graffiti, basically. So this is assumed to have been here for 500 years.
That's great, isn't it? It's very clear as well. So you said this is associated with Lord Darcy?
Lord Darcy. Downstairs we've got a room called the Stiller Room, which unfortunately, once again, we can't go in because it has the most beautiful oak beams going over the window and over the corridor. And in each corner of that, once again, there's a big carved stag's head, which shows that these beams were actually originally part of the original house, mm-hmm. 500 years old. And I mean, normally people would be able to see them, even in lockdown situations when we're open again, people will be able to see those.
Oh, so in this cabinet, we can claim the earliest known reference to tea. So this year at Temple Newsham, we're going to be having a tea festival in homage to this. So I don't know if you can see, there is one that is a bottle of China drink.
Yes, I can see
the
it.
Absolutely. So that's 1644. So far as we know, no one's argued with us yet. We've got the earliest reference
to tea. Yeah, tea.
I
drinkers.
Love that. A bottle of China drink. Yeah. I shall have to remember that. Brilliant.
Well, Rebecca's actually working on this tea exhibition as we speak. She's doing it. It's getting done. So that'll be hopefully. When will that be happening?
8th of June, that launches. We've got a really lovely community arts exhibition, and then we've got a programme of events that's going to be with us in October. Lots of lovely things like afternoon tea with Lady Hartford, tea and a twirl, so you can come and have afternoon tea and learn some historical dances with our in-house dance troupe.
So, oh, well, that will be lots of fun
things coming up.
Go on, Rebecca.
So this is the panelling that was in what would have been the Tudor Long Gallery. It's got various different animals on, and we absolutely love them. Some of them are really obvious what they are, and then other ones, they're almost as if they've been drawn by an artist who had never seen that kind of creature before. so there's some quite interesting ones.
Do you
ones.
Want to point a few out to us? This looks like, I don't know, is that a deer or a dog?
It could be a deer or it could be a rabbit. They're very open to interpretation. Some of them, the birds are a little bit more obvious. There's some on the wall behind you a fish.
Oh, yes.
But this one down here could be a monkey, could be a tiger. Who knows?
What is especially interesting sometimes, and we've got some upstairs as well, and what might be a griffin. there. Mm. And upstairs, we've got some more panelling, and on that, this shows. Tudor.
I did notice a bit of linen fold panelling.
Yeah, that's the
here.
One, yeah.
There's it's no from.
Okay, we can wander.
Britain Hall, it's from Britain Hall. I understand they're turning Britain Hall into a school or some sort of college. And this was in one of the bedrooms at Britain Hall. So rather than put it into storage, they decided to put it on display here. So it is authentic Tudor panelling in an authentic Tudor space. And it does look very grand indeed. Yeah. If you look at the work that's gone into this, it's phenomenal.
It's beautiful. I love linen panelling. You've got some amazing kind of Renaissance-style carved heads. It's so typically 16th century, that carving. It's wonderful, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's a fantastic, really fantastic piece of work. You know, it makes you wonder how they did it without modern tools and everything, because it's just phenomenal carving. The bed there, that once again, that came from Britain Hall. And it came from a room that Henry VIII actually slept in. So the chances are, there's a very good chance that Henry VIII actually slept in that bed.
Where is Breton Hall?
It's South Yorkshire.
Right.
Once again, you've got an authentic Tudor fireplace. But what is a bit special about this fireplace is, of course, we've just been talking about Tudor beliefs. And over here in the fireplace, if you just look out for that trip hazard there, we've actually got some really strange little marks.
Oh, yes.
And these are actually what's known as witch marks. Yeah. Have you come across them before?
Yeah, yes, you know witches what they are, marks, then. Yeah.
So there's these witch marks. There's some at the bottom there as well.
Yes, I can see them. So I guess maybe with this being an open...
It's to stop the evil
stop
spirits
coming
down,
down exactly. into the chimney, down into
it's
the room.
It's the evil spirits coming down, yeah. Yeah, I think of all the rooms in the house, this is probably the one that does... It is our best example of a Tudor room.
So, Rebecca, you brought us into this exhibition space, and there is a glass cabinet with a document which has very distinctly Tudor writing. Can you tell us about what we're looking at?
So this is the original document from when the house was built by Lord Darcy, and it's the original inventory, so it lists every single thing that's in the house down to the locks that were on the doors and the keys for them.
That's interesting. It was an inventory when the house was built, because quite often it was an inventory when people were arrested, executed, or, you know, the house, they'd been attained and their goods forfeited. So, do you have any idea of why it was created when the house was built?
We don't really have any idea why, other than it could have been for maybe tax purposes, or that he was thinking that he might sell it, maybe. We just really don't.
So, do either of you have some favourite pieces from the inventory?
Well, it's really interesting because there's a lot of talks of locks and keys and stuff. And I can't remember, in one room it does say there's a door to a kitchen or something with no lock and no key, which is really quite amusing. Mm. But there's a lot, you know, little things like that.
It shows the level of detail, though.
It doesn't, no lock and no key.
That these inventories went to. And I guess there's also, often inventories gives us clues of the rooms that were in existence because they list the contents by the room. Is that the case for this inventory?
Yes, yeah, completely. It's so they go through room by room as if they've walked through the house like we have with you, really, and list, like we say, everything that's in the room and even
keys that aren't there and what should be there but isn't, I suppose, so that they know exactly what is there.
Yeah, they were always very thorough, inventory takers, yeah. I have to say.
And it's really curious. You can tell the things that they think are valuable, and there's a lot of talk of materials and various different cloths and everything, you know, because, of course, they were very important to the people back in the day then, you know. No, well, absolutely. I mean, as you know, and your listeners will know, that the sumptuary laws in Tudor times forbid certain people for wearing certain colours. It was actually against the law to wear certain colours.
So you've brought us into a smallish room, and the walls look like they've been stripped back, so you can almost see the fabric of the walls and the building. And there are some interesting architectural features that give us hints and clues as to how the house has been remodelled and maybe some of the Tudor features. So can you tell us a little bit about what we're looking at?
Well, the story goes that the beam above the window was a big oak beam, and they discovered dry rot in the beam. So they had to strip the room back very quickly thoroughly to get rid of the dry rot, because, of course, in a house like that, that would be it could be really
problematic.
Really tragic circumstances. So they stripped the room back, right back to how it is now. And then the curators decided that it would be a good idea to leave this room as it is, because, as you say, it shows Temple Newsham through the ages. This is an authentic Tudor room. This dates back to when the house was first built. And if you look in the corners of the room, you can't see that one because of the screen, but when the screen goes, it's actually behind there. There's actually a Tudor door, very similar to that one in the corner
it's
there.
A bricked-up, classic Tudor doorway there.
It's a beautiful Tudor. And also, there's a little recess here, which we believe was a kind of altar, because, as we were saying earlier, people were very, very religious, and this was mainly a Catholic house, it has to be said. We have a fireplace in the wall here. This wall now is inside. In Tudor times, it would have been the outside wall of the Tudor house. In the old photographs, you can actually see the chimney, which would have been fed by this fireplace. You can actually see on the wall is some this wood panelling. This would have been a bit later than Tudor times. This would have been put on later. But in the wall up there, if you look there, you can see a beam that's been painted blue.
Yep.
And that would have been up there, being hung for hanging tapestries and things like that, because, of course, wallpaper in Tudor times was very uncommon. They didn't really know how to make it. The fireplace has been replaced. It did have a lovely Tudor fireplace in there, but it was taken out and replaced with this one in the 20th
yeah, much
century.
Yeah, so very, very 20th century.
So, yeah, 20th
so, yeah,
century.
So you can see this from the Tudor point of view, that lovely fireplace that's completely blocked up now, but it just gives us, as you said, that feel for how the house has been changed over time. And
what is nice that people often, very often miss, is that if they look through the door here, we've actually got a lovely
You do. It's quite a tall one, actually, as well, because Tudor doorways with that typical Tudor arch are usually quite small, I guess, because the people were quite small, but that's really rather lofty.
That's a nice, really nice example.
And so all of these, again, all of these rooms that we've been going through, the rooms we've been talking about, are normally open and non-COVID times.
Yeah,
so
completely.
You'll be able to see. And good luck about finding your way around, because I'm completely disoriented. But maybe we could just pull this back to the Tudor history, because we were talking, of course, about how the fact that the Crown gave this to the Lennox family, Lord Darnley was born here. What happened towards the end of the Tudor period? What happened to the house?
Towards the end of Tudor, well, when Lord Darnley married Mary Queen of Scots, as you all know, Elizabeth was furious, and she arrested Margaret Douglas and she confiscated the house from the Lennox family. It remained in the Queen Elizabeth's hand in this.
Yes, so it reverted to the Crown.
It reverted to the Crown right until the death of Elizabeth. And then, of course, after Elizabeth, James I came to the throne. James I, of course, was Lord Darnley's son.
Of course.
Lord Darnley's son was born. Lord Darnley was born in the house, of course. So he basically gave the house back to the Lennox family.
Right, OK. So that really concludes our Tudor story. Of course, as you pointed out, the house continued to have a life and many iterations over the period. But from a Tudor point of view, it's just so significant, because you've got such incredibly important people associated
with the house here?
Well, Lord Darnley, of course, his blood runs through the monarchy right up until today. He's related to every single monarch since Tudor times.
But what about visiting under normal circumstances? How can people find out about you? And what kind of visiting experience, or how do people, do they need to book tickets, etc.? What can you tell us about that?
So you can pre-book tickets on the Temple Newsham website. We do also have a limited amount of tickets per hour slot that you can just walk up and buy if you drop lucky and we're not too busy. In non-COVID time, everything is open. It's completely free flow. But this year it will be one group per room. So we're very COVID safe. You've got the whole room to yourself to spend as long as you like enjoying our lovely interiors. We have the whole house open apart from the one wing, the south bedrooms wing, that will be closed this year. There's plenty to see. And we just can't wait to welcome visitors back in, really.
And in terms of getting here, do you need a car to get here, or are there other ways of getting transport to Temple Newsham?
There are buses that come from Leeds. They stop on the edge of the estate, and like we said, we are quite a big estate. It's not an unfeasible walk in, but it's a good sort of 10-15 minutes walk to the bus. But there's really regular buses from Leeds. Otherwise, if you're driving in, we've got tons and tons of car parking. Lots of space, and you can really make a full day. We've got the house, we've got the beautiful parkland, we've got the walled gardens, which have been moved down a little bit further away. They're down near the ponds in the parkland down there, and of course the farm, which in itself has quite a lot of original buildings. So plenty of history in there still, as well as lots of cute, fluffy animals.
And very, very family friendly.
Very, yeah. We've just been, over winter, we've been working on our interpretation through the house. We've got a new kids trail that goes all the way through, with a lovely lady called Faith, who was one of the servants in the house. So she's going to guide the kids round and show them all the hidden bits, which is quite interesting for adults too, because it does show you the things that you probably wouldn't notice as you walk around.
Oh, that's brilliant. So if you want a family-friendly day out, definitely something for you here, as well as just folk who just want to come and soak up the history who maybe don't have little ones in tow.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both so very much for taking the time to take us round today and show me all the iterations, fascinating iterations of Temple Newsham. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. It's been lovely.
You're welcome, more than welcome.
Psst. Before we finish the show, remember, you can support my work via my Patreon programme, where various levels of sponsorship are available, starting at just $1 a month. Check out all the details of how to become a patron in the link included with this podcast. Oh, and don't forget, you can be part of my closed Facebook group, where fellow time travellers like you hang out with me and each other to share some of our favourite things about visiting the UK. From great Tudor places to visit, to the best way to take your cream tea in an afternoon. From the latest travel news to the traditional Sunday roast. So don't miss out, and you can apply to join by clicking on the link in the description. So now it's back to close the show. Well, that, as they say, is all for now, folks. I look forward to seeing you again next month in August for our next episode of the Tudor History and Travel Show. But just a reminder, if you want to keep in touch with all my on-location events as they happen, then head on over to Instagram and search for me, the Tudor Travel Guide. I'd love to see you there. But until then, let's hope we get some lovely, warm, sunny weather to see us through July and August. And if you're overseas and you're looking forward to coming here, we are all ready to welcome you back just as soon as COVID restrictions allow. So, my friends, have a lovely month out and about, having your own Tudor adventures, if possible. And I will see you again in August. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Tudor History and Travel Show. If you've loved the show, please take a moment to subscribe, like and rate this podcast so that we can spread the Tudor love. Until next time, my friends, all that remains for me to say is happy time travelling. Mm-hmm.